Let us start sort of on lesson 31. See if anybody was able to make it through these questions. I know Lynn did, but we were discussing that before class and thought, you know, some of these just aren't in the book. Where did you come up with these? So Lynn says she thinks it's just from secular history, perhaps. So I handed out last Sunday night and also sent via email lesson 31, Judah's Last Days. And as I was going through these and trying to write down scripture references, I just ran into problems almost right away. Just be aware that these questions that I have given you are from, are from this PowerPoint series that Mickey and I have been using. And it's written after this book, but it's written by Richard Thetford, who's obviously not Bob and Sandra Waldron. So there appear to be things in here that he's talking about that I personally haven't found in the lesson book. It's certainly possible that I just skipped over them somehow, but I think that we're missing a few things here. So, and it's entirely possible that some of his answers are actually in his PowerPoint slides, which, of course, we haven't gone through. And so that may be why we can't find some of these answers. Anyway, let's just go through some of these questions. I guess I didn't open that up. First of all, let's remember where we are now. Here we are down in California. And remember that we're way over here on the left side of the United States, as people lovingly call the left coast. And then we are going over here to a much bigger area of the Bible lands that we've been studying in most of our detail. It kind of stops right there. And now we've got the, what two kingdoms do we have here? We have the kingdoms of both Assyria and Babylon. And what kingdom is going to come after Babylon? Right. And there was a comment made by the author of this book, of our lesson book, that the Babylonians, after they established their kingdom, sort of had an agreement with the Medes, who lived up north of them, that the Medes would have this territory and the Babylonians would have the rest of the world. You know, so that's what happens later on. And then after a while, apparently, the Medes and the Persians over here kind of got together and decided they didn't like Babylon anymore, and they walked in and took it. So, but anyway, so that's where we are in the world. And, of course, we've got little Israel over here all by itself, and all we've got left really is Judah. And really what we've talked about here, we see that Judah is going the way of all things. So let me get this thing turned off. So, did I not open these questions? Probably not. Let's see. All right. So, we're looking at the ones that we're calling Judah's Last Days, lesson 31. Make it as large as we can here so that we can see things. So, so I'll ask the easiest one first. In 586 BC, to whom did Judah fall? The Babylonians, right? So, earlier than that, the kingdom of Israel fell to whom? The Assyrians. And in what year was that? 721. Okay. So that was the previous lesson. Now, here's one. And so when we look at... it's in question two. Now, in question two, it says, when Israel fell, Judah felt the heavy hand of the Assyrians. Judah was also troubled by raids from what two groups of people? Now, let's just look at the first part of that first. And so if we look at for example, the heavy hands of the hand of the Assyrians. If we look at 2 Kings chapter 18, and starting at about verse 13, we see the heavy-handed Assyrians here. So we see that in 2 Kings 18:13, we start the story of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, coming against King Hezekiah. All right. But was King Hezekiah the last king of Judah? No. And did Assyria take Jerusalem, Judah, all that? No. Not them. So it's here that we see the start of the Assyrian persecution against Judah. And they've taken a lot of their cities, but they came and they camped about Jerusalem, and that didn't turn out very well. So in 2 Kings 19:35, right? What happened in 2 Kings 19:35?
Woke up dead.
Yeah.
185,000
of them woke up dead. Oh. So the king took his, as Mickey says, ball of yarn and went home.
And actually, as the scripture says, it's when Sennacherib woke up, he found out.
That's right. Sennacherib woke up to 185,000 of his men dead. Did we not close this door? So that's how the battle with Assyria went. It was won by God, and the Assyrians packed up and went home. So that was interesting there. So now, in the second part of the question, it says Judah was also troubled by raids from what two groups of people? Now, I read through the lesson book and through Chronicles, Kings and Chronicles, and couldn't find anything. Jenny?
It's in the first paragraph.
In the first paragraph of the book?
The book. So, the second collection, Judah was also troubled by raids from the blank, 28, 17, and 18.
Oh! Edomites
and
Philistines. That was just way too easy. What was that, 2 Kings?
2 Chronicles. 28, 17, and 18.
Okay. Let me open another Bible here. So 2 Chronicles 28:17, huh? All right, I completely missed that. And I we're again.
Who teaches the
Bruce, right? Or no. Doesn't John teach that on Wednesdays? Right. All the kids are sick with the Gugowski's house, so John and Julie are home. So we have the one student. All right. Okay. Well, I'm glad you found that, because I don't know how I managed to just zip right over that. All right. So, 2 Chronicles 28, 17, and 18. At that time did King Ahaz send unto the kings of Assyria to help him. For the Edomites had come and smitten Judah and carried away captives. The Philistines also had invaded the cities of the lowland and of the south of Judah, and had taken Beth Shemesh and Ajalon and Gederoth and Soko with the towns thereof, and Timnah with the towns thereof. This is one we pronounced Gizmo the other day. Gimzo, also in the towns thereof, and they dwelt there. Okay. For Jehovah brought Judah low because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had dealt wantonly in Judah and trespassed against Jehovah. Okay. All right, so there's the answer. Well, that was an easy one. I spent seconds looking for the answer to that. The problem is that the author of the questions doesn't put any backup in his teacher's guide. All right. Now, During this difficult time, Judah had a very good king named whom? Who?
Hezekiah.
During this time. We're talking about here right at the time when Judah fell. So Hezekiah was in power at the time that Judah fell. I mean that Israel fell. And Second Chronicles 28. So
yeah, 27 through 29, 1 through 4.
And Ahaz, there it is. Ahaz slept with his fathers, and so 29, Hezekiah began to reign when he was 25 years old and reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. So that's the difficult time we're talking about, is when the Assyrians came down and when the 185,000 woke up dead, and the Edomites and the Philistines were persecuting them. So that's what we were looking at then. So, but yes, Josiah was also a good king, but he comes later. Interesting. It's part of the strategy on how to take tests. If you don't know the answer right away, look at the next few questions, because a lot of times people will give it away. And so in the next question it says, Hezekiah cleansed the temple. You go, wow, there's the answer right there, Hezekiah. So it doesn't have, well, it does have to do with his goodness. He cleansed the temple and invited all the people to come celebrate the Passover from Dan all the way to where? Yeah, the whole thing. Where, when we had the divided kingdom, it was from Dan to where? Bethel, okay. But when we talk about the extent, for example, of David's kingdom or Solomon's kingdom, as far as where the people dwelled, it was from Dan to Beersheba. So Beersheba's way down in the south. I think I have a map open that's got that on it. So, but it's not going to show us much. So, here's Bethel right. Here's Bethel right here. So that would have been where people went from, and Dan's up here somewhere. It's not too far above. Anyway, it's from here to here was where the divided kingdom was. But here's Beersheba down here in the south of Judah. So when we talk about the big extent of the kingdom, it's from Dan up here to Beersheba. And so that's one thing that Hezekiah did, was he tried to get all the people together. Even though Israel had been taken away, he tried to pick up sort of, as it were, the remnants of the people of Israel. And so how did, generally speaking, the people take to this? Hezekiah inviting all the people down. Most of them were like, forget you, Jack. But it says that there were a lot of faithful people that came from some of the various tribes, from Manasseh and Ephraim, and a couple others were mentioned. All right. All right. Now, so Hezekiah then reinstituted the Passover, and it says there that there hadn't been a celebration of the Passover like this since the days of whom?
David and Solomon.
So it was they that, excuse me, that,
that was in 2 Chronicles 30:27.
2 Chronicles 30, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was great joy in Jerusalem. For since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there was not the like in Jerusalem. So that's where that's the assembly that they had. And I think later on, we get later on, I think Josiah did the same thing. And I think it said that it was quite a great Passover at that time also. All right. Okay, so that was question five. So in the sixth year of Hezekiah's reign, who fell to Assyria? Pardon? I didn't hear what you said. Yeah, Samaria. Okay. The author here has Israel, but essentially that's the same thing. I mean, the capital fell But it was the last city, essentially, to be taken, was Samaria. And that was the capital of the northern kingdom. And so that meant this was now the end of the kingdom of Israel. And the folks were taken away and such like as that. Now, in the midst of this, while Assyria is pressing upon Israel and Judah, who comes up against them? The next question, during Ashdod and Egypt make a coalition to go against who? I guess I just mentioned that, didn't I? So I got the question kind of backwards. So yeah, so they got together, Ashdod and Egypt. Where's Ashdod from? What sort of nominal kingdom are they from? Yeah, they were the Philistines. So if we go back to this map that I had opened up, here's Ashdod over here on the coast. As a matter of fact, they're calling it the Kingdom of Ashdod. So, but it's really the Philistines. But the Assyrians came down here and they defeated the Philistines as well as the Kingdom of Israel. So they took this area all the way down. And they pushed against Egypt, but they didn't make the headway that they wanted to make against Egypt. All right. Ashdod. During this time, what king was having trouble on the eastern side of his empire as he struggled with Nineveh and Babylon for about 12 years? Yeah, it was Sargon of Assyria. Right. So that's where, of course, oh, that's not a very good map there, is it? The let's see if I've got the, there's the Assyrian Empire. So Nineveh is up here. Here's Nineveh right there. And nominally, the Babylonians were down here further. But they got together and they were kind of fighting against people. But let me see. During this time, what king was having trouble on the eastern side of his empire? Struggled with Nineveh and Babylon for about 12 years. And that was King Sargon of Assyria. Yes?
I think it's a poorly worded question.
I believe.
If Nineveh is the capital of Assyria.
Yes, so it is.
He's not fighting against his own capital. Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, is fighting with Babylon.
Yes.
So, and that's how it is in the book. There's a struggle between Nineveh and Babylon that lasted about 12 years.
Right.
But the question is worded poorly.
Yeah. So that's on page 124. It talks about King Sargon of Assyria was having trouble on the other end of his empire. Merodach-Baladan, a Chaldean prince of Babylon, rebelled and set up an independent state in Babylon. From Assyrian records, it seems that this particular struggle between Nineveh and Babylon lasted about 12 years before Babylon was subdued. And I think we need to change that question. So I'll try and make a note in here to do so. All right. So, but question number 9, and we've talked about this country already, what country was reasserting its power, wanting a buffer state between itself and Assyria? Egypt. And we talked about that last Sunday, I believe, about the fact that Israel's kind of caught here in the middle. And the thing is that Israel is the only place where people can go in this area. I mean, if we look at the Assyrian Empire up here and the Egyptian kingdom down here and realize that nobody can really traverse these areas right here with the modes of transportation that they had available to them at that time. But the only way to get from Assyria to Egypt was to go through Israel. And so they were always using Israel and they would push on Israel because they needed a buffer zone, And so that's why Egypt came up, that's why Assyria came down. They're all trying to consolidate control of their particular empires, and Israel just happened to be in the way. So. All right. When things began to look very bad for Judah, King Hezekiah went to God in prayer for help, and God struck down the Assyrians with what? A plague. So, yes.
That's what I said too.
Yeah.
But in 2 Kings 19:29-36, it says he sent an angel of the Lord. So wasn't it God through his angel?
2 Kings 19, what was it?
29 through 36.
If they're using plague as a general term.
I think the plague is what they used in the book, in the lesson book. So.
Talk about the plagues of Egypt. They were the plague, like bubonic plague.
Oh yeah, and I. Right. Well, here's the 185,000 down here in verse 35, and so. Yeah, I guess it doesn't mention anything about a plague per se.
Death
did it.
In verse 35, it says, "Then it happened that night that the angel of the Lord went out and struck 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. And when men rose early in the morning, behold, all of them were dead."
Yeah. And I think that's where the book here, it mentioned, this is, I think that's where it had plague. Here it is. Yeah. On page 127, right down below the little quotation there from Isaiah 37. As he had promised, God struck the Assyrian host with a plague. Well, you're right. Technically speaking, it doesn't say anything in the scriptures about a plague. Unless, did we look at the Chronicles mentions it, but where are we? There was, I'm trying to remember. Hezekiah is setting things up here. Sennacherib, so they're gathered, and with him, King of Assyria, send his servants. Let not Hezekiah deceive you. Rendered not. Hezekiah slept with his father, so we jump right past it. I thought, as I was reading through Chronicles, there was something that it mentioned about that.
2 Chronicles 32:21.
21, okay.
The Lord sent an angel and destroyed every mighty warrior, commander, and officer in the camp of the king of Assyria.
Yep.
So he returned in shame to his own land, and when he entered the temple of his God, some of his own children killed him there with the sword.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, 2 Chronicles 32:21 says essentially the same thing that 2 Kings 19 said, is that God sent his angel. So, but yeah, I think what they're doing is like someone mentioned, that we're equating this to the plagues of Egypt. And of course, in the Passover, when the angel of death came, you know, that was one of the plagues. Yeah. So, all right. Okay. Yeah. Long stretch here, but okay. In the next page, in the questions, as a result, what city was spared for another 100 years? Jerusalem. Yeah. So. Now, whoops, I think I did the same thing you did, Lynn. I just skipped right over to the next page. Didn't realize. All right. So Jerusalem was spared for another 100 years, and as the Assyrians were going and railing against the people in Jerusalem, what did the officials want them? What language did they want them to speak so that the people wouldn't understand? Aramaic, yeah. Or what? What did you say, Carolyn?
It's a Syrian or Aramaic language.
Oh yeah, the Aramaic language, and as a matter of fact, even at Jesus' time, was kind of the universal language of that particular area for quite a while. What one of the Old Testament books is written partially in Aramaic? Daniel, right? So you see, for example, the story about Nebuchadnezzar and his exile and going around and eating grass like the the animals and things like that. That's all that area, all that is written in Aramaic in the original.
Is that language related to Hebrew?
It is. They're both Semitic languages, so, but I'm not sure what its origin was, whether it was further over toward the Ur of the Chaldees type thing, or if it was further on up toward Haran, or where. We'll all study that. All right. This language was spoken by most of the people in what area? Mesopotamia and Syria is what we've got there. What name used for the first time in the King James Version in 2 Kings 16:6 began to be used to refer to the Israelite people? Jew. Okay. So, generally speaking, we see the this is used most often in the captivity and after they come back. But it is used a couple of times here. And it's probably because they're being influenced by these people that speak Aramaic. And so it's probably their word for them. And that's why all of a sudden we're using the word Jew. And the people supposed that that came from the root of Judah. In other words, it's just a way to talk about the people of Judah. All right, so in this passage, that's 2 Kings 16:6, this new name refers to the people of where? I guess I just mentioned that, didn't I? Randy?
The New American Standard says Judeans.
Judeans, okay. So that'd be interesting to look up the... So if we look for the word Jew and some permutations thereof and go to the New American, right? See if that even occurs. Hello?
Jeweler.
Yeah. There we go. So 2 Kings 25:25, that appears to be the first time in the New American Standard.
Is it in Esther?
What?
Is it referred to as Jews in Esther for some reason?
Got Chronicles in Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, yeah. At the citadel in Susa, a Jew whose name was, and so on. But here up at the top, where we've got this quotation right here from 2 Kings 25:25. So this is in the New American Standard, I think. Mm-hmm. 10 men struck Gedaliah down so that he died along with the Jews and the Chaldeans who were with him at Mizpah. So that would be the first usage there. And then in the King James, and I think in the American Standard, we go back to 16:6. Yeah. And of course, it was used there in Exodus 28:11. It says jeweler. Oh. All right. So what king followed Hezekiah and reigned for 55 years? What?
Manasseh.
Good King Manasseh, right?
Manasseh,
that's right. That's the one that I was thinking about a couple of classes ago. I know there was somebody that ruled for 55 years, and so it was, yeah, Manasseh. It's interesting that as we look at this, that Manasseh was the king that really broke the straw for God, and it's because of him, God says to several other kings, that he says to Josiah, even though you're a good king, because of the sins of Manasseh, Judah is going to be taken away. So it's interesting that this worst king, as it were, of Judah was the one that lasted for the longest. All right, Manasseh was the worst king that Judah ever had. Imagine that. God declared that he was the worst. He was worse even than whom?
Yeah,
that's what. So in the book it says worse even than the Amorites. Yeah.
Well, is it 2 Kings 21? Does it mention that too? 21.
2 Kings 21.
2 Kings 21. Yeah.
Manasseh king had done these abominations, had done so wickedly above all that the Amorites did that were before him, and hath made Judah also to sin with his idols. I thought he was talking to Josiah, but I guess he's not. No. No, that's just Manasseh. Okay. All right. Well, you can see all the things here in 2 Kings, for example, that Manasseh did. And like Mickey has mentioned a couple of times, it's just amazing to think that you've got a good king like Hezekiah, who reigned for almost 30 years, and his son grew up and became king. He was 12 years old when he started. But he immediately started going bad. I mean, he was already bad probably, but he's just the opposite of his dad. And I guess that's really not unheard of. It's, most of us say, well, I don't want to be my dad, you know. And you'll remember that, people will make comments on Facebook and places like that of, I'm sounding like my mother, you know. And so you're in your 30s or something like that, you've got children who are growing up and need instruction / discipline. Then all of a sudden you hear your mother and your father come out of your mouth and you're going, oh, I thought I wasn't like them. Yeah. So, but Manasseh didn't appear to be much like his dad. Now,
it was a joyful day when my daughter did that too. Because she was tending to her baby at my house. And she said something that was exact carbon copy of what I said. I was in the kitchen and she stood up and turned around and looked at me, and that look on her face, I will never forget. 28 years ago, but I will never forget.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm my mother. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I am my mother.
Yeah. Okay, so, but Manasseh didn't seem to be that way. Now, what did Manasseh do more toward the end of his reign? Yeah, after he'd been taken where?
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd been taken up to Assyria, King, what's his name? Sennacherib? Brought him up there, and let me see if we can find that. I'm not doing very good at scanning things tonight. Josiah, his son, reigned in his stead also. Shed innocent blood and all that he did. And Manasseh slept. Okay. Probably we need to go back to Chronicles to find this. Pardon?
2
Chronicles 33. Okay. He built altars. He did this. He did that. And carried him to Babylon, verse 11. So 2 Chronicles 33, 11 and 12 says, when he was in distress, he besought Jehovah his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. Now, I'm not sure that I saw in here the time frame of when Manasseh was brought to Assyria. Did anyone else come up with that as to how far into his reign he was, or how old or whatever? If we look at our timeline chart here. And, all right, come on. 55 years, and no, it doesn't say anything about it in here.
In 2 Chronicles 33:11.
Yeah.
It just says, therefore the Lord brought commanders of the army of the kings of Assyria against them, and they captured Manasseh with hooks, bound him in bronze chains, with bronze chains, and took him to Babylon.
Right. So yeah, so have no idea, at least as near as I recall, and I just read through this again before I got here, that I couldn't come to a conclusion as to how far into Manasseh's reign that this actually took place. So it took place sometime during his reign, and he was he was repentant. Interestingly, in verse 13 of 2 Chronicles 33, it says, then Manasseh knew that Jehovah, he was God. And so Manasseh was brought back to Jerusalem. So we see here, though, that Manasseh was taken by the king of Assyria and brought, the king of Babylon and brought to Babylon. And it doesn't say anything about another king reigning in his stead. Did you have your hand up, Chris? Okay. I'm not sure that whether he was there in Babylon a very long time, but we don't see that anything was done as far as setting up another ruler went. And so then Manasseh comes back, knowing that Jehovah, it says, is God, and he built much more on the wall of Jerusalem, and actually made quite a number of improvements there. Notice it says that he built an outer wall to the city of David on the west side of Gihon in the valley, even to the entrance at the fish gate, and he compassed Ophel about with it and raised up to it a very great height, and he put valiant captains in all the fortified cities of Judah. You'll remember that one of the kings, and I don't remember who it was it Ahab? No. One of the kings captured one of the kings of Judah and came down to Jerusalem. Remember, he broke down 400 cubits of the wall of Jerusalem. I'm just now remembering this. So anyway, and so I'm wondering if the wall's been broken all that time, because there was a mention, I think, of the fish gate at that time also. I'm not positive on that, but I think. And so now when it says he compassed Ophel about with it, Ophel was the very southern part of Jerusalem. It was actually the area that was originally called the City of David, because it was the one that was there when the Israelites finally captured Jerusalem. The major part of Jerusalem that we see today is the Jerusalem that David and Solomon built. And so the little part down in the very southern end of Jerusalem is what the city of David was. It's not particularly big. But now, of course, there's a wall all around Jerusalem right now, but it's the Byzantine wall. So what we see there around Jerusalem may or may not be like the wall that was there at that time.
I think Manasseh presents an interesting challenge in that as we've gone through all the kingdoms, we've been quick to label good, bad type things. And again, as you point out, for most of Manasseh's life and reign, yes, he was evil. But the fact is that he ended his life by humbling himself and turning to God.
Yeah.
And yet, if you can contrast that with like King Asa, we say, well, he was a good king, and for most of his life he was, but at the end, he turned away from God, he looked for help from the kings of men, and died because of that.
Yeah.
And it just, again, it's easy to portray how somebody starts, it reminds us of life, it's how we finish the race that has to do with our eternal destiny.
And where would we go to see that? In the Old Testament, there's two actual passages in the same book, one in the third chapter, one in the 33rd chapter, that talk about this, what happens if you're a good guy and you end your life bad, or what if you're a bad guy and end your life good, what will happen? Ezekiel. So if you look at, let's go over to Ezekiel real quick. I think 33 for me is, I think, easier to understand. If I can find it once again, like I say, I haven't had much luck skimming over, but in the beginning, it's about the warnings that you're supposed to do to say to people. Here it is in verse 11, starting at verse 10. A little context. And thou, son of man, say unto the house of Israel, thus speak ye, saying, our transgressions and our sins are upon us, and we pine away in them. How then can we live? Say unto them, as I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked. but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn ye, turn away from your evil ways, for why will ye die, O house of Israel? And there it is, in verse 12, the righteousness of the righteous shall not deliver him in the day of his transgression. And as for the wickedness of the wicked, he shall not fall thereby in the day that he turneth from his wickedness. Neither shall he that is righteous be able to live thereby in the day that he sinneth. When I say to the righteous that he shall surely live, if he trust in his righteousness and commit iniquity, none of his righteous deeds shall be remembered. But in his iniquity that he hath committed, therein shall he die. And again, when I say to the wicked, thou shalt surely die, if he turn from his sin and do that which is lawful and right, if the wicked restore the pledge, give again that which he had taken by robbery, walk in the statutes of life, committing no iniquity, he shall surely live, he shall not die. None of his sins that he hath committed shall be remembered against him. He hath done that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live. Did you have your hand up, Carolyn? A minute ago? Okay. So, Ezekiel talks about that, and we need to remember that if we're a good guy most of our lives and we die being an evil person, it's not going to go well for us. If we live our lives wickedly throughout and for some reason happen to be like Manasseh and be given the opportunity to repent and turn back to God, then we will not die in our sins. Yes, now you have your... Okay.
Workers in the vineyard. Even the ones who came at the late hour.
Oh, yeah.
Get the same reward.
Right.
It's not a complete parallel.
Yeah.
The same idea.
Yeah. So those that worked in the heat of the sun for 11 hours or 12 hours or whatever, and they whined about the fact that they were that the people that were there for just an hour gave the same amount or got the same amount as they did. Okay. Yeah. Good example there. All right, back to the questions here. Manasseh remained loyal to what empire? Syrian. This is the same empire that took him away, but he went back down to Judah, and he was obedient, as it were, to the Assyrians until the day he died. Who came to the throne of Judah at the age of 8 and was determined to serve Jehovah? That was Josiah. That was our good king. When cleaning the temple, the workers found an ancient copy of the law of Moses. Who told Josiah that the law was correct? What?
Well,
I missed that part.
I didn't quite get that, but I inferred from that again that was the hold of the prophetess.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, I mean, that was as close as I could come.
Yeah, and that's what he's got down here is hold of the prophetess. Where did I? I'm looking for Huldah here, but yeah, that's what it was. Is that after they had done all these things, then several of the people of the king's people that were around him, they went up and talked to this Huldah, the prophetess. I don't see it right off the bat, but
2 Kings 22:14.
All right, 2 Kings 22:14.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh. Oh, that is Hilkiah. Okay.
I thought she was earlier, though.
I thought she was later. Okay, we'll find out. Let's find out.
Verse
14.
14?
Oh, they all went. Hilkiah and all those people went to Huldah the prophetess. It happens because they have forsaken me and burned incense.
No,
Second Chronicles 34:22.
Yeah, 34:22.
All right, so there they are again. Went to Huldah the prophetess. It appears almost the same exact words as in Kings. You humbled yourself before God, heard his words. I have also heard you, said God. That's it. Gather thee thy fathers, and thou shalt be gathered to a grave of peace. Neither shall thine eye see all the evil that I bring upon this place and upon the heavens thereof. And brought back word to the king. So anyway, so as I mentioned before, it's interesting to note that the people found, or that the guy that was helping to clean the temple, what's his name, Hilkiah, was it?
Yeah.
He found the book, and he delivered it to Shaphan, and Shaphan comes up to the king and says, "Look, Hilkiah brought me a book." I go, "Wow, what do you do, check it out of the library?" You know, it's I don't know if, like I say, if it was intended that way, but it seems like, it's like, oh, well, I wasn't familiar with this book before. And, of course, it was obvious that Josiah wasn't familiar with the book either, because Shaphan read it to him, and Josiah was quite upset about the fact that they hadn't been doing what was in the book. All right, perhaps Mickey will be back on Sunday, we'll see, and continue from a review of the divided kingdom. Look at, if you will, lesson 32, and work through that. All of those answers are pretty easy.